So, what do a free $900 iPhone, a multi-million dollar indie horror movie, and, well, a stadium full of booing college students all have in common?
I mean, it sounds like the setup to a really bizarre joke.
Right, but they're actually all symptoms of this massive ongoing tug of war happening right now over who really controls the future of the internet. Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Glad to be here for this one.
Yeah, we're really glad to have you. So today we are pulling from the May 18th, 2026 edition of the Tekken Morning Tech Newsletter.
Which is just packed today.
It really is. We're looking at a single day of tech news that paints this surprisingly vivid picture of a digital landscape that is just in total transition.
Right.
On one side, you have massive tech giants essentially throwing billions of dollars at you, the user, just to win your loyalty and lock you into their systems.
Just trying to buy you, basically.
Exactly. And then on the other side, you have this younger generation and independent creators looking at that corporate vision for the future and just, well, violently pushing back.
It's a fascinating day of news to unpack, honestly, because we are watching the old playbooks burn in real time.
Totally.
Like, tech companies are realizing that the strategies that got them to a trillion-dollar valuation over the last 10 years,
Yeah.
they just aren't going to work for the next 10. And they are scrambling, like truly scrambling, to adapt to a user base that is way more skeptical than they used to be.
Right. And to really understand this scramble, we need to look at how these companies are trying to buy their way onto your desk and into your pocket.
A hardware foundation, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, think about the last time you tried to switch your cell phone plan. It's usually like a nightmare,
Oh,
right?
absolutely. Hidden fees, mailing in your old device.
Praying it doesn't get lost in transit.
Yes, exactly.
Well, T-Mobile just blew that entire model out of the water with this unprecedented promotion. They are handing out an $899 iPhone 17 completely free to customers who switch carriers.
Which is just an aggressive move.
It's wild. And you don't even have to trade in your old phone. You just keep it.
Wait, no trade-in at all.
None. All you do is port your phone number over and sign a 24-month contract on one of their specific premium unlimited plans.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, and get this, they are spending $2.2 billion to target 2.5 million switchers. Okay, let's unpack this. T-Mobile isn't just selling a phone, they're buying a customer.
Yeah.
It's like a gym giving away a free treadmill, like a really expensive one to keep in your house, just so you sign a 2-year membership. But burning $2.2 billion up front seems incredibly risky.
Well, what's fascinating here is how the battleground has shifted. You know, the math behind that risk is what dictates modern tech economics right now.
How so?
So T-Mobile is absorbing this $899 upfront retail hit because the telecom landscape has completely changed. For the last decade, carriers fought over network coverage.
Like the old Can You Hear Me Now commercials.
Exactly. But 5G is mature now. You can get a signal basically anywhere, so coverage just isn't the differentiator anymore.
Right, everyone has good coverage.
Exactly. The new weapon is pure value proposition warfare. T-Mobile knows the lifetime value of a customer on a premium, high-margin, unlimited plan far exceeds that initial loss.
Because once they have you.
Right. Once you are in their ecosystem, the statistical likelihood of you leaving drops drastically, just due to the sheer friction of switching later on.
Which puts their rivals in a terrible position, right? I mean, Verizon is currently offering $200 off an iPhone with a trade-in, and you have to sign a 3-year contract.
Right.
And AT&T is offering $150 off on a 3-year contract.
Yeah.
T-Mobile's offer makes those look like scams in comparison.
They are definitely forcing AT&T and Verizon into a highly defensive, kind of outdated posture
Yeah.
because T-Mobile is betting that modern consumers despise the 36-month lock-in and they hate the anxiety of the trade-in
Oh,
process.
I hate the trade-in process.
We all do. By removing all of that friction and just eating the upfront cost, T-Mobile is accelerating user acquisition at a scale the legacy carriers simply can't match right now.
Without blowing up their own quarterly earnings reports.
Exactly.
And what really stands out in today's newsletter is that T-Mobile isn't the only giant playing this game.
Right, the Microsoft news.
Yes, Microsoft is running the exact same playbook right now with their operating systems. They're offering a Windows 11 Pro lifetime license for $9.97.
Which is huge.
It's a 95% discount off the normal $199 price tag.
And The timing and the mechanism behind this are critical because Microsoft ended mainstream support for Windows 10 back in October of 2025.
Right.
They desperately need the global user base off that older, vulnerable platform and onto Windows 11. But Windows 11 introduced a major hardware hurdle.
TPM chip, right.
Yes, it requires a TPM 2.0 chip.
Which, you know, for anyone not building their own computers, sounds like alphabet soup.
Oh, totally. Think of a TPM 2.0 chip as a physical microscopic vault built directly into your computer's motherboard. Its entire job is to handle secure encryption. It works with Windows features like BitLocker, which essentially scrambles all the data on your hard drive.
Right, so if someone steals it.
Exactly. If a hacker steals your laptop and tries to pull the hard drive out to read your files, they can't.
Because the key to unscramble that data is locked inside that physical TPM vault on the motherboard.
You got it.
So Microsoft is saying, we have this highly secure fortress, but nobody wants to pay the $199 admission fee to get inside.
Right.
So they just drop the price to less than 10 bucks. They remove the financial friction. It's the same exact strategy as T-Mobile.
Two sides of the same coin.
Yeah. They have both decided that, but you know, once they get you inside that walled garden, user expectations are completely shifting.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you would think these companies would keep piling on flashy new features to keep you engaged, but instead they're quietly stripping away the gimmicks to focus on what actually works.
Yeah, the Microsoft Teams announcement.
Exactly. Microsoft just announced they are permanently retiring the Teams Together mode feature on June 30th, 2026. Here's where it gets really interesting. We thought the virtual auditorium was the future of work.
We really did. This is just a perfect example of development philosophy colliding with actual user behavior.
I mean, I remember when Together Mode launched in July 2020.
We were all trapped in our houses.
Exactly. And suddenly you could click a button and put all your coworkers into a virtual auditorium or like a digital coffee shop.
Yeah.
I remember sitting in a meeting, looking like a disembodied head floating over a pixelated stadium seat. We genuinely thought we were experiencing the future of virtual work.
And the initial novelty drove massive adoption. At its peak during the pandemic, it had a 45% adoption rate.
Which is huge.
It is. But the analytics driving Microsoft's decision today paint a completely different picture.
What are the numbers now?
By May 2026, so right now, adoption had plummeted to just 15%.
Wow.
Yeah, while 85% of users actively chose the standard boring gallery view, you know, the simple grid of video squares.
Because it's authentic and reliable.
Exactly.
Which raises the question, though, of why they wouldn't just leave Together Mode in the software for that 15% who still use it.
Yeah.
Like, why pull the plug entirely?
Well, because of the hidden computational tax.
Okay, what does that mean?
So, Together Mode wasn't just a static filter. To make it work, Microsoft servers had to use AI to constantly monitor your video feed, cleanly cut out your silhouette in real time, separate you from your background, and composite you into a shared virtual scene alongside like 15 other people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that requires a massive amount of server processing power.
And when a server's working that hard just to render an image of a virtual coffee shop, it has to prioritize, right?
Exactly.
If it's prioritizing the complex visual rendering, it starts dropping other packets of data, like audio.
Yes.
So the moment you actually try to speak in the meeting, your audio lags or your face freezes.
That is the exact mechanism of failure. Users quickly realize that looking like you're sitting next to a coworker doesn't matter if you can't hear a word they're saying.
Right. It's useless.
So Microsoft is trading the heavy computational cost of a pandemic-era gimmick for basic reliability. By killing Together Mode, they free up immense server capacity.
Which lowers latency and stabilizes the core video and audio feeds.
Precisely. They are letting pure user behavior data, not executive brainstorming, dictate the feature sets. They recognize that people just want a meeting tool that doesn't crash.
So they're quietly tracking how we use these tools to optimize them. But Apple is realizing that users are getting extremely uncomfortable with all this tracking.
Yeah, the privacy shift.
Exactly. Users are demanding sovereignty over their own data, and Apple is leaning hard into that with the redesign of the Siri app in iOS 27.
This is a huge pivot.
It really is. They've turned Siri into a much more capable standalone chatbot, similar to ChatGPT, where it maintains a history of your conversations.
Right.
But they are introducing an explicit auto-delete function.
Which is very different from the rest of the market.
Totally. You can set Siri to automatically purge your entire chat history after 30 days, 1 year, or keep it indefinitely.
And this creates a very stark contrast in the AI market because platforms like ChatGPT and Google Assistant, they default to retaining your data.
Right, because they need your interactions to train their next generation models.
Exactly. Every call you ask them makes them slightly smarter. But Apple is opting for on-device processing.
Beating.
Where the AI runs locally on the chips inside your phone rather than on a giant server farm, and they are explicitly giving you the power to starve their AI of that training data.
So what does this all mean? I mean, if Apple isn't vacuuming up all that user interaction data to train their models, aren't they basically guaranteeing that Siri will be the dumbest AI on the market in 2 years?
That's the risk, right?
Yeah, like how can it compete if it's not learning from millions of users every single day? Are they sacrificing Siri, getting smarter, just to win a PR war?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, Apple is treating privacy not just as a moral stance, but as a competitive moat.
Okay, tell me more about that.
In an industry defined by surveillance and data extraction, Apple is basically selling privacy as a premium feature.
Right.
They know that as AI becomes more integrated into our lives, reading our emails, managing our finances, tracking our health, consumers are going to experience intense privacy fatigue.
Oh, I'm already feeling it.
Exactly. So giving the user an explicit, easy-to-use delete button is a deliberate strategy. They want to capture the most lucrative, privacy-conscious segment of the market.
Ah, I see.
They are betting that you will choose an AI that is maybe 5% less capable if it means you have 100% control over what it remembers about you.
That makes a lot of sense. And, you know, that demand for autonomy, the desire to not have a massive tech company acting as a middleman for your data, It isn't just happening with personal AI.
No, it's spreading everywhere.
We're seeing it in how media is created and distributed, too, because individual creators are seizing control back from massive legacy distribution systems. They're tired of renting their audiences from corporate middlemen.
Right, the Markiplier story.
Exactly, which brings us to the YouTuber Markiplier.
Yeah.
So he directed and starred in a feature film, a horror movie called Iron Lung.
Yeah.
It had a tiny $3 million production budget, went to theaters, and made $50 million at the box office. Mm-hmm. That is a 17x return.
A theatrical success story for an independent creator is impressive on its own.
It really is.
But what he is doing with the secondary distribution is what threatens to entirely upend Hollywood.
Right, because normally, after a theatrical run, a movie like this goes to Netflix or Amazon Prime or Hulu.
But not this time.
Nope. On May 31st, 2026, Markiplier is releasing Iron Lung exclusively on YouTube. Mm-hmm. He completely bypassed the legacy streaming giants.
It's incredible.
He essentially built his own global movie theater and just invited his 37 million direct subscribers to walk in. Does this signal the death of traditional streaming models, or is this like a one-off luxury only mega creators can afford?
This raises an important question about the shifting center of gravity in media.
Yeah.
Because the economics of that decision are staggering when you compare them to the traditional Hollywood model.
How do the numbers break down?
Well, historically, distribution was the hardest part of making a movie. You needed a studio to get your film into theaters and onto streaming platforms.
Right.
And because they held the keys to distribution, they dictated the terms. If Markiplier took Iron Lung to Netflix, a traditional streaming licensing deal might offer him a 15 to 25% cut of the attributed revenue.
That's it.
Yeah, and they almost always demand a surrender of future creative control or, you know, sequel rights.
But on YouTube, he is already a partner.
A massive partner. A creator with his leverage on YouTube commands a 70 to 85% revenue share.
Oh, wow. That is a huge difference.
Exactly. 70 to 85% on ad sales, rentals, and digital purchases. And he keeps all the underlying intellectual property. He retains total creative control.
That's the dream.
Yeah. Because Hollywood's entire economic structure is based on being the middleman that connects the art to the audience. But Markiplier already has an audience of 37 million people.
That is larger than the viewership of most legacy cable networks.
Exactly. He doesn't need a studio to find an audience for him. Direct creator audience relationships are completely upending those middleman economics.
And he intimately understands his audience. He knows exactly what they want because he talks to them every single day.
Right.
You know, they followed him from playing indie horror games in his bedroom to buying a ticket at a movie theater, because that direct relationship is authentic.
It's a real connection.
And this provides the perfect transition to the final story in today's newsletter. Because if Markiplier represents what happens when you perfectly understand your young audience,
yeah,
The University of Arizona commencement represents what happens when the old guard of Silicon Valley completely misreads that exact same demographic.
The contrast couldn't be sharper, honestly.
No kidding.
Okay.
So on May 17th, 2026, former Google CEO Eric Schmidt gave the commencement address at the University of Arizona.
Right.
And throughout the speech, whenever he highlighted the rapid advancements in artificial intelligence and its impending impact on the workforce, he was met with sustained booing.
Booing, groans.
Yeah, vocal protests from the thousands of graduating students in the audience.
It was intense. And the data provided in the Tikkun Morning Analysis frames this perfectly.
What do the surveys say?
Right now, 58% of baby boomers view AI as a massive opportunity for productivity and economic growth.
Okay.
But 68% of Generation Z fears that AI will cause direct job displacement.
Wow. 68%.
Yeah. The students aren't booing the technology itself, you know? They're booing the economic implications that the speaker represents.
I mean, if you put yourself in the shoes of those students sitting in the Arizona heat, it makes complete sense.
Oh, for sure.
You have spent 4 years taking on debt, grinding through exams, trying to build a resume. You are walking across a stage to step into an incredibly fragile, uncertain economy.
Yeah.
And a billionaire from Silicon Valley stands at a podium and excitedly tells you that a machine is about to revolutionize the entry-level workforce you are desperately trying to break into.
The disconnect is huge.
The total lack of situational awareness is staggering. No wonder they booed.
Right. And it's an existential economic anxiety for them.
Because for a tech billionaire, AI means their company runs faster and their stock portfolio goes up. But for a 22-year-old graduate, AI means the junior copywriting job, or the entry-level coding position, or the basic graphic design gig they were relying on to pay rent. It might not exist in 6 months.
Yeah.
Or it means their resume is being filtered and rejected by an algorithm before a human ever even sees it.
Which is incredibly frustrating. And honestly, for the last several years, legacy tech leaders like Schmidt have been almost exclusively focused on solving technical hurdles, like scaling server farms, reducing hallucination rates in language models, and, you know, navigating government regulations.
Right.
But the Arizona incident proves they have entirely failed to navigate the social resistance to their innovations.
It's not just a PR hiccup.
No, not at all. You cannot simply innovate in a vacuum. If the generation that is supposed to adopt and utilize your technology views it as a direct threat to their survival, you face a major adoption crisis.
As we're seeing play out,
yeah.
And the media coverage of the event really highlighted how everyone is struggling to define this clash.
Yeah, the framing was very different across outlets.
Yeah.
Exactly. NBC News played it straight with former Google CEO booed, but Business Insider focused heavily on students fear job displacement.
Great.
And then TechCrunch framed it as a lesson for tech leaders. It's a profound disconnect between tech leaders and early career professionals, which is really the thread that ties this entire day of news together, if you think about it.
How so?
We are watching an industry realize that user trust and user autonomy are suddenly more valuable than raw technological capability.
That's a great point. Let's look at the sheer scope of what we've covered today.
It's a lot.
It is. Telecom giants like T-Mobile are paying billions of dollars to absorb upfront costs just to remove the friction of joining their network.
Locking you in.
And software monopolies like Microsoft are stripping out flashy, computationally heavy features like Together Mode because users are demanding basic reliability over novelty.
Exactly. And then you have Apple sacrificing early AI training data to build a fortress of privacy, giving users a literal delete button for their interactions.
Yep.
Independent creators like Markiplier are leveraging their direct audience relationships to cut legacy Hollywood studios entirely out of the profit pool.
And a new, younger generation is loudly, publicly drawing a hard line against the unchecked automation and AI optimism of legacy tech billionaires.
So as we wrap up this analysis, I want to turn the focus directly to you, the listener.
Yeah.
When you evaluate your own digital footprint, what stands out to you? Where do you fit into these generational and economic shifts?
It's a great question.
Like when a company offers you a free device or a heavily discounted operating system, are you calculating the long-term cost of being locked into their ecosystem? Are you optimizing your life for convenience, or are you starting to demand more privacy and control over your data?
It is a lot to process.
Yeah.
And I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over on your own today.
Okay.
Something that builds on everything we've just discussed. We just saw how a single creator with a camera and an internet connection no longer needs a billion-dollar Hollywood studio to reach the masses. Okay. And we saw how the youngest, most digitally native generation fundamentally distrusts the automated future being laid out by legacy tech giants.
Yeah.
So are we heading toward a future where the next massive cultural and technological shift isn't built by a traditional corporation at all?
Oh, that's interesting.
Right. If the trust in institutions is this low, are we moving toward a decentralized network of users who prioritize human creation, direct connection, and absolute privacy over corporate automation?
It's definitely something to seriously consider the next time a tech giant offers you something for free.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We will catch you next time.